5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. The Doris Duke Charitable Foundation announced last week that saxophonist and composer Wayne Shorter, pianist and composer Danilo Perez, and pianist, composer, jazz activist, and educator Chris Davis have each received a 2021 Doris Duke Artist Award, quote, in recognition of their ongoing innovation and in part in the field of jazz. For more information, ddcf.org. Two new releases on Teo Forms Records. Drummer Whit Dickey, bassist William Parker, and pianist Matthew Shipp's Village Mothership came out on October 15th. And pianist Matthew Shipp's new solo work, Codebreaker, is due out on November 5th. Both will be available on LP and CD. For more information, omfidelity.com. Trumpeter Chris Payson and pianist Armin Danilian perform at Gateways Inn and Restaurant in Lenox, Massachusetts on Friday, October 29th. For more information, gatewaysinn.com/dining. This Friday and Saturday night, October 29th and 30th, at the Jazz Forum in Tarrytown, New York, the Lou Tobacco Trio performs two sets. And on Saturday, October 31st, Brazilian Sunday with the Freddie Bryant Quartet for two sets. For more information, jazzforumarts.org. Guitarist Brad Shepik's quintet premieres Human Activity Suite Part 2, Code Red, at the Bronx River Arts Center in Bronx, New York on Saturday, October 30th. The suite, quote, is a 10-movement meditation on the degree to which the danger to the planet has increased over the past 15 years and the disastrous effects on local populations around the world. It is also a response to Shepik's 2007 composition, Human Activity Suite, which was organized around the seven continents and the global effects of human activity on climate. For more information, bronxriverart.org. At Jazz at the Falcon in Marlborough, New York, the Aaron Evans Trio performs on Sunday, October 31st. On the main stage. For more information, liveatthefalcon.com. Iphigenia, a new opera, will be performed by its creators, saxophonist Wayne Shorter and bassist Esperanza Spalding, as well as a 10-person chorus and chamber orchestra at Mass MoCA's Hunter Center in North Adams, Massachusetts, on Friday, November 5th and Saturday, November 6th. These preview performances will take place following a two-week residency at Mass MoCA before Iphigenia debuts as a traveling operatic performance. For more information, massmocha.org. Live music returns to Quinn's in Beacon, New York, with the celebration of multi-instrumentalist Joe McPhee on his birthday, Wednesday, November 3rd. After this performance, the Monday Jazz Sessions begin on Monday, November 8th. For more information, facebook.com/QuinnsBeacon. And now for new releases. Out tomorrow, pianist Sylvie Courvoisier and guitarist Mary Halverson's Searching for the Disappeared Hour on Pyroclastic and Jazz Lab's Logos Labos Musicus on Effendi. Out already, percussionist Pete Escovedo's Rhythm of the Night on ESCO, Negroni's Trio's Esperanza's Hopes on Sony Music Latin, and woodwind player Beth McKenna's self-released Beyond Here. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger. My guests today are students at York University in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Aaliyah Guthrie, a third-year vocalist in performance, Reese Bartlett, a fifth-year drummer, BFA in music, and Camille Key, a fourth-year tenor saxophonist in performance. Thank you, you three, for joining me on Situation Fluxus.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Are you all originally from Canada, Camille?
No. Well, my birth parents, they're Chinese, but I was raised in Italian family as well.
Okay. Reese?
Yep, I was born in Canada. Not in Toronto, though.
And Aaliyah?
Yes, I was also born in Canada.
Okay. Have any of you gigged outside of Canada or outside of Toronto?
Yes, I have performed at a ceremony for a wedding in Jamaica.
Okay.
Nope, not for me. It's always been Toronto.
I've done a little bit of stuff in America in high school. The band I was in, high school band, we'd go to America every year. So we would go around and perform in the States for elementary schools.
Right. What have you already learned being on the bandstand as side players and leaders? As a hush falls over the barroom. Reese, your experience.
Well, you definitely have to learn to like how to work with people, and you also have to learn how to work fast or just different situations, because you know things can sometimes go wrong too, right? Like some instrument can break or something like that. So you kind of have to just improvise with what you're given and just kind of make everything work out.
Camille?
Yeah, so for me personally, being a side person, I would think about how can I contribute to the music instead of how I want myself to sound in other people's music. Like I don't need myself to have a particular sound to stand out in other people's music or playing in other people's band. I would think more about like how the composer or how the band leader would want me to sound like, and then I'll try to accommodate that. And if I were a band leader, like similar but different, I would think about if I were to think about how I want my band to sound, to you know, to present my music, I would choose my band member carefully. When the sheet music are handed out to them, like they can do whatever with my music, because you know, like I trust my musicians, and what they do with my music, I trust them totally.
And Aaliyah.
Yes, for myself, I would say definitely learning to feed off the energy that your other bandmates give you. Sometimes you won't always have like an audience that really gives you energy, and it's important to be able to continue to have a high level of energy and to be able to share it and interchange it between the different people you're playing with.
From your perspective, what are some structural changes that you would make to jumping into your chosen field of music for newly graduated students? The three of you have just said to me that you've had the experience out there performing and dealing with certain situations. How would you change that structure for other graduate students that are about to get out there? Let's start with Aaliyah.
I would say definitely there's gonna be like problems and stuff happening and mistakes in terms of maybe like performances, and you'll have the opportunity to kind of like change the mistake. For example, say if you're playing something, you play a wrong note, there's a certain way that you can come back from that, and knowing that you're gonna make mistakes, whether it's in performance or even in like conversation and working with other people, but knowing that there can be solutions, and to be open-minded and always remember to like listen to other people. Don't always have your own perspective or always pushing your own thoughts onto others. It's important to listen, and because you can learn a lot from other people.
Reese.
So basically the question was like, what will we change in the basis of performing?
Well, just the structure. What I mean by structure is, okay, you're out there looking for work, mm-hmm. looking for gigs. How did it happen for you? And looking at what happened to you, how would you change it? That pipeline of how you become a professional musician and transition out of college and into the professional life.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is the connections you make. Like, you have to make strong connections with other musicians, and just it, like, music's just kind of like a team sport. So you kind of have to learn how to work off of other people. And when you play together, you build those connections, and then you meet more people, and just building a good profile of various musicians, you know, it's always good.
And Camille.
Yeah, well, like for me, I think this situation could be different for everybody, like for all the young cats that are coming out. For me personally, like I've been choosing a different road, like in terms of like getting myself out there. For example, first year, before first and second year before COVID, I would be the one who looking for gigs and then like go to every jam sessions and then like sit in with everybody to just play as much as off like as possible. And then like at night, I'll just give my hours and 8 hours, like the 8 hours a day thing, like every day. But like at this point, especially during COVID, during lockdown, I have this time to, you know, focus more on basic. And then I realized I just kind of have to be honest with myself, because I don't have the chance to play with other people. Everybody's in lockdown. So yeah, they're like, I have this, like everybody, they have a certain expectation for themselves as players, or, you know, just as people. And for me, when I actually sat down with myself, and then, yeah, like I'm nowhere near the level where I wanted my playing to be. And like, even I could learn many, many things on the bandstand. There's still hard work that needs to be done, like in the practice room. And at this moment, like I do made connections during first and second year, even during lockdown. So when people call me, I'll play those gigs. But at this time, I'm not looking for a gig for myself, for my band at the moment. So the idea is, I'm just at the moment I'm doing the work that, you know, the homework. So I'll be able to keep doing what I love in the long run. And I think there's many great players my age. They've been doing the hard work as well, and they also have the energy or the opportunity to, you know, play more often than I am. Then that's just great. It's great for them. So I think the situation is a little bit different for everybody, for all the young cats that are coming out. So I wouldn't necessarily want to change anything in the process, but I think it's important to know like what you want, what are the expectations you have for yourself.
Yeah.
When you're coming out. Yeah.
You know, you talk about having that energy. When I was an undergrad, I was in a quintet. I was the French horn player. And we were lucky enough to find some gigs through our professors and just through people we knew. I remember once we were playing at a dinner party, and I felt like, you know, this was a Hollywood set. We were set right in the middle of this room as people were wining and dining around us. But by the middle of my second year, Actually, the end of the second year, I decided I wanted to go into education. Not that education is easy, but I said, I don't think I want to be on the road and looking for work constantly. Because it is a lot of work and it takes a lot of networking and sometimes talking to people you really don't like. There, I'll stop there.
I got you.
You've all studied with Professor Viswanathan. What's the best musical advice that he's given you and the best life advice that he's given you?
I can remember one situation where we have like artists in residence and he was there and there was a big thing with, I'm sure musicians all know this, fake books and then the iReal app. And the sheet music was slightly different. So they were trying to play, I think, just like a jazz standard. I can't remember which one, but they were trying to play it. And like, there's two different things going on because the sheet music wasn't the same. So it's kind of like communication's key. So he's kind of taught us like, you got to communicate. If you're doing sheet music, you kind of have to look at the same sheet music or at least, you know, have an understanding of like the groundwork, what you're going for the song, things like that.
How about a life skill?
Definitely lots of theory. try to get in your theory every day. I sure don't always, but you know, it's important. It's definitely important to try to get the ear training every day because it makes everything else a lot easier.
Emil, how about
for me,
musical advice?
Musical advice, you don't have to play like so much, too many notes all the time, because like when I first met Sundar, I was like the guy who just like shreds all the notes, and then he really pointed it out, like you don't have to, you can play some like simple and still sound good. So yeah, I thought at the time like shredding was kind of cool. And then I was the one guy who plays all the notes, like as many as I can. And right now I'm trying to like find, spend more time working on butter notes, like playing less, but like, tastefully. And for life advice, I would say, start soaking my reeds. I didn't know how to do that before. And then I saw Sundar had this reed, a container has reeds in it and some liquid. I'm like, what's that? Like, it's the thing I use to soak my reeds. Like, you don't soak your reeds? No, I don't. Like, you should.
You should. Yeah. And Aaliyah.
I would definitely say, like Reese said, with the theory, knowing like the fundamentals, because that will be able to broaden your improvisation even more. And just knowing that, usually for me, like on the spot, I kind of just sing and it'll come to me, but actually knowing what you're doing while doing it, it's so much better, you know, and it helps bring more ideas for yourself. And a life lesson, I guess, be open to make mistakes, because in your mistakes, there's a lot of like gold stuff that you can take from and that will push you in to grow.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so before me, I have a third year student, that's Aaliyah. I have a fourth year student who's just about ready to graduate, that's Camille. And a fifth year student, Reese, you're also ready to graduate. So I want you to talk to each other, Camille and Reese. What are some suggestions that you would give to Aaliyah as far as what she should focus on in her final year of study?
You want to go first? Or...
Sure, I can. I think it depends, honestly, on the person too, right? Because music is so vast. You can do so many things with
it. No. You. What would tell her?
I would say do as much playing as you can. So do as many workshops, like ensembles. I personally, that's what I would do. Get as much playing and as much like in-person, real-time experience you can. Especially now that things are opening up too, it's going to be good.
Oh, for me, I would say, reorganize your priority and your expectation for yourself. for example, if like I think it's something that we think about during the first year and second year, and then we figure out if we want to play this music at the highest level possible, or we want to go into education. And I think fourth year is the time that you should start doing preparations for after university. And if you're going for the playing route, looking for gigs, making connection could be a good option. Or if you want to play the long game for gigging, playing at the highest level, maybe it's still being in the shed like 8 hours a day, 12 hours a day. That could be another, you know, good option for like for how to spend your fourth year. And if you want to go into education, then do research on the program you could potentially do after your fourth year. And the other advice is right now at this time, original music, they're very important. It's not so much a couple of years before, but right now there are even bars in Toronto, like their venues in Toronto or New York, they only accept original music. They're jazz bars, so no standards. So having composed a set of repertoire, even if you don't believe in the music that you write, like for example, myself, like still it's good to have those music ready. Then, you know, it's gonna help you, like when you get together with new cats, the people you haven't met before, and then man, let's each take two tunes of our own, and then like let's make a band, and then you'll have something to offer. That's my advice. Yeah.
Aaliyah, now here's your opportunity to ask two folks who are going to be graduating soon. What are some questions you have for them?
Well, that's a hard question that I would like to hear. I guess, like, do you know exactly what you plan on doing after, or at least like an idea of where you want to go, or how, an idea of where, what you want for your future for yourself?
Okay, you two, one of you, both of you, answer her. Answer her.
I personally have a couple loose ideas. I don't have anything concrete yet. I personally really like school. I know some people don't, but I love learning. So I kind of hope maybe to go back and get, do more studies. And just, I don't know, I was also looking at music therapy. I find that field very interesting. So maybe even getting a degree in that, or just going for my master's. Just, I don't know, we're all still young. So I'm just going to kind of see where things take me. But I do want to continue education, and I want to work in music in some way.
So for me, the end game, it's never changed, is to be playing in the scene, the New York scene, and then at the highest level that I could, you know, I could possibly play at, which I'm nowhere near at the moment. There's still so much work to be done. So the immediate plan after university, original plan would be keep practicing, get a day job to, you know, maybe save up for tuition for my master's. To apply schools in New York, maybe Manhattan School of Music, or even Boston. Actually, no, because Berkeley, they have free tuition for master. that was the plan, but like going to master in those schools is less about learning, because when you go to New York, you have to be able to play already. So going to those school is mainly to build connections for myself in the future to be playing in the scene. But like there's still a checklist have to work on my own before I go apply to those schools. However, recently, just last couple of days, there were conversation between me and my profs at York University that about me doing a master degree at York University. So this is reason to me, like this is news to me. So I'm actually considering it. Maybe I'll just doing a master at York, I'll keep, you know, practicing. So when I go to New York, I'll be able to play right away. Yeah. So there are a couple of directions that I'm considering. Yeah.
Aaliyah, are you satisfied with those answers?
Yes. Yes, I am.
One more. Ask them another one.
What is something you've learned being in a university as a student that has changed the way you go about, I guess, in terms of like your career or how you hold yourself as an individual?
The big question. Well, just there's so much, like, even non-music related, right? Like the university experience when you're, I think most people nowadays come to it straight out of high school, right? So you're basically a child still, you know, you a couple months prior before that you had asked to go to the washroom. Now you can have complete freedom, right? So I think it's just the change of freedom and just how learning how to manage your own time and finding drive within yourself, not from other people. Yeah.
So for me, it's definitely discipline. Before university, I was practicing about 7 hours a day, but classical music. So when I got into university, jazz it was kind of new to me. I was an improviser, but like not doing changes improviser because I was working on classical stuff all the time. So I got so much stuff to catch up on. So being disciplined about practicing, you know. Sometimes it's more important than passion. And that's just kind of what I learned from like going through university.
So good answers.
Very good answers. For more information on York University, yorku.ca. And now for some music.
He was 40. 40.
Thank you.
from the group Avatar, led by saxophonist Sundir Viswanathan. Their new release, due out tomorrow, is titled Worldview on In Sound Records. From it we heard Ecris Spirito, Reclaimed Spirit. From the liner notes, the synthesizer solo on Ecris Spirito was unexpected and a last-minute addition. The original plan was to have a traditional world instrument play that part. The language and words heard in the tune are in Esperanto. You're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com, info@wgxc.org, feedback@wgxc.org, or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Our website is wgxc.org.
By the way, Cheryl, did you get the physical copy of the album?
No, I have the download. I have the download.
Okay, because I'm going to ask my publicist to send you a physical copy because...
Mr. Ernesto?
Ernesto, that's right. Because there's a little surprise in each album.
I saw that but yeah. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I don't want to tell everybody what it is. So I can, if you want, I'll tell you afterwards in private.
Is it a Geddy Lee bass string or something?
Oh man, that would be cool. I wish I could get those. I want one actually. Geddy, if you're out there listening, please.
My interview today is with Sundar Viswanathan, Associate Professor of Jazz and Jazz Area Coordinator of the Department of Music at York University in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. His new release with his group Avatar is titled Worldview, and it becomes available tomorrow, October 29th, on In Sound Records. So thank you for joining me on Situation Fluxus.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Avatar is your latest project with your compositions and arranged by you. From your website, Avatar's music marries classical Indian music, modern jazz, Brazilian lyricism, atmospheric textures and ambiance, Javanese gamelan, and contemporary improvisation. Have you had to explain the way you've married these diverse musical genres, say to a traditional jazz lover or a student rooted in playing traditional music?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Actually, no one's ever asked me a question that like that. So thank you for that. I guess my answer would be yes and no, and I'll explain to you what I mean. So yes, I come into situations where I have to contextualize. I have to say, where is this, you know, where's this influence coming from? Why is it jazz? Then I start talking about my influences and my studies and, you know, music that I've gotten into, and that I've gotten into so many different world musics. You know, not to the degree that I've gotten into jazz or studied jazz, but I have explored them, and that I don't see jazz as limited to, you know, I mean, again, my second part is going to answer this, come into this too, but I don't see jazz as being limited to music that's swings, you know, that's only swing, you know, feel rhythmically, or that's only based solely around improvisation. Not that jazz is that, but my point is that jazz is evolving always and continually. And so, you know, to traditionalists, yeah, I may have to say this a few times or explain very briefly, and then they start to get where I'm coming from. So mm-hmm. I sort of tell them, you know, it's jazz, and I'm calling it jazz because I have to call it something. You know, I mean, my background is jazz, but I would just call, I would just call it music. You know, I mean, it's music influenced by different music from around the world, and including jazz. So that's the first part, is that sometimes I do. But then the other part is that you know, the perception and understanding of what jazz is changing so rapidly around the world and in even jazz circles, that people are getting that jazz is going to have all kinds of influences in it. I mean, there's all kinds of scenes in New York where, you know, people who came from a, you know, quasi-traditional or modern jazz background are putting instruments like tabla in their music and other world music instruments and involving that those kinds of musics into their music. So the definition of jazz is changing. So I would say that's why I answer yes and no, because I think there's understanding that the music has to evolve and change because that's what jazz does. And also that, yes, this does come from jazz, and because I've listened to all kinds of music and studied all kinds of music, I'm couching it and putting it in the context of jazz.
Worldview is dedicated to children worldwide and has the message, quote, that all should have a place of safety physically and emotionally. The emotions that you've dissolved into this recording, are they from personal experiences or just by watching parts of the world implode?
Well, I would say both. Again, my answer is both. Well, personal experience, I mean, okay, so having children, having a safe space, there's a lot of things that come into that that need or that desire, that hope. Two that directly relate to this album are my views of the way the world is being run, the way our leaders, you know, the way adults are, what they're doing to this world and what and how they're running this world. And we've seen some pretty crazy things happening. And got to tell you, I mean, there's been a lot of lack of in leadership, a lot of lack of compassion, lack of, you know, of intelligence, lack of empathy, that impacts on our children, the most important citizens of our world. I mean, children see what we're doing and they ask questions and they say, why is it like this? My children ask questions, you know, pre-pandemic, what was happening, you know, I'm in Canada, but you know, what was happening in our part of the world, the United States, particularly, you know, politically, what was happening, the lack of partisanship and the lack of unity and things like that, you know, not just the United States, but everywhere, really. And children ask questions. My children are saying, like, what's happening? Why are people fighting? Why are people doing this? And why does this have to happen? And they don't, those children may not get this. But we're causing them to go through this anxiety. So why do we have to do this? And why shouldn't children live in a world where they can just be free of these kind of worries? We try to shield them from it, but it's not so easy nowadays with media and social media and all kinds of other things. So that there's that part. And then there's also the, you know, I was looking at things that are happening, have been happening over this past number of years with, let's say, like refugees coming from places like Syria and going to refugee camps and not being in a place of, essentially a place of safety. I mean, you know, it's more safe than they were. See, that comes down to that point. Why should they have to leave their homes to go to another place? That's ultimately the question. You know, what are we doing wrong that people aren't able to live and grow in a space of safety and in compassion and harmony in their own spaces where they were born and brought and started to be brought up? So I was looking at what's happening in refugee camps. So and that those are directly related to some of the thoughts around some of the compositions in this album. And then also, I have experiences, not like that, but I have experiences where I was just a child, I went through a fair bit of racism in my childhood. And as a child, there was, you know, especially in those days, there was no one to tell you, you know, that it wasn't like today. Like today, there's a lot more messages around racism and bullying and things like that. And that wasn't happening in those days. You know, when you're bullied or there's racism, they'd say, yeah, just buck it up. You know, you can handle it, that kind of thing. Right. So children shouldn't be hearing those messages and they shouldn't have to get to that state, to that position where we have to tell them, oh, it's OK, or it'll be better. Right. Why do we have to do that? So that's kind of, you know, I feel children are so important. They're a future and we're not positioning them. We're not putting them in a place where they can be safe.
You know, I'm struck by what you just said about racism and what I read about you being called Sam as a child.
Yeah.
I'll ask the question. Why were you called Sam?
So I'll take ownership of that, because I'll say they used to call me, you know, people always had problems with my first name, and my last name is even worse. So this happened, that particular transition to Sam. Funny story. I was working in a car wash. I was a teenager, you know, washing cars summer. And then they were saying, okay, what's your name? And I said, Sundar. I said, what? I said, Sundar, what? I said, Sam? I said, oh yeah, okay, sure. Go right ahead. There I became Sam in that moment. Someone making a mistake and me agreeing to accept that, right? That's the thing. I agreed to accept it, right? And it took me many years to come back to Sundar.
Yeah. As a six-year-old, my mother would have to correct me when I'd come home from school, because my teachers would say my last name wrong all the time. And so I just parroted that, do roll call. Yeah, Cheryl Bono is here. And
yeah.
So I understand that. But it's to, like you said, after a while, you come back to who you are and you have to stand up and say, well, this is my name. But picking up on what you talked about being working at a car wash, you're so eclectic. You've toured and played in some rather remote and unlikely places, like the north of the Arctic Circle. You've been a lounge singer on cruise ships.
Yep.
You're a foodie. Hello, fellow foodie.
Yes.
Oh, yes. And you're a rocker at heart.
Yeah.
All hail Rush.
That's right. I should have worn my Rush shirt for this, but I can't see me on radio. Sorry.
How did you find Kindred Spirits to play on Worldview?
So I had gotten into the Toronto scene. I got back into Toronto a little over 20 years ago, after several years in the States, New York and Boston. And I check out the scene. The scene had changed a lot since I'd left. And I check out the scene and hear different people play. I used to get out a lot more back then, but obviously pandemic's not the story, but being a parent, I don't get out as much these days. But back then when I was younger, I got out a lot. I used to go hear music, and I'd hear a lot of what people were doing, and the people that I sort of were drawn to, they were doing their own thing. It wasn't, I was still playing standards at that time, and I had my own quartet doing that kind of stuff, which I still love to do. And they were doing that too, but they were also doing things like playing music that was, you know, jazz oriented, but had like a one, for instance, my guitar player had an Italian, Sicilian influence in the music. You know, there was that influence. And then my drummer was playing in a lot of bands that incorporated, South American influences, Caribbean influences, et cetera, African influences. So he was playing a lot of those things. And my bass player and my tabla player, obviously they were into the Indian music, the North Indian music, classical music, and doing that. So, my vocalist, she started off as a student at my school that I teach at the university. And she was actually my student, my private student originally. And I saw some talent there. And then she went out and started doing great things with the pop world and free jazz world and things like that. And so everybody had really eclectic things that they were doing. And I just, I got some, you know, one thing I should note is that Avatar has really evolved since it started over 10 years ago. There's been different people that have gone through the band, and a lot of really fine musicians from the Toronto area. And I just, maybe almost 10 years ago that I settled in with the core band as it is. And it all ended up being people who were influenced by all kinds of different music. See, it comes down to, I didn't want my music to sound like one kind of music. Oops. I wanted my music to sound like unique music. Didn't want it to be attached to anything particular in any particular genre. So I think there's all kinds of influences that come into the music by way of all the people that have their own influences. So I hope that answers your question in a long roundabout long way.
Yes, yes. You've led the Sundar Quartet and the Indus West Project.
Yeah.
What fuels what? Does performing inform your teaching, or does teaching inform your performing?
Oh, it's like a circle with arrows going to each word, literally. I mean, it's like someone asked me, what do you, think is, you like to, what is, what your focus is in improvisation, composition, or what's the other one? Theory. You know, they all inform each other, right? So yeah. So when I so performing, you know, obviously there's a lot of improvisation involved. When I go to teach, I'm improvising a lot too. I mean, I have the information in my head through many, many years of studying and whatnot and teaching too. And I don't necessarily, like, I have, when I teach, I have like maybe a couple of cue words that I know, or even not. I just go in with an idea that I want to relay. And then I go for it and I teach. And I feel that's the best way to teach is you try to relate it in the most clear way possible. And you go from the what you know, what's inside you, and what you can relate. And that's the same with performing, because I can only play what I know and what I've learned in my background and what I've studied, and I can try to be creative with it and be different with it. But when I'm improvising, I don't try to play something that I try to be fresh in the moment. And that's kind of with the teaching as well. Mm-hmm. So they relate back to each other. And I think that's the way to keep it as interesting as possible.
So here we are. I'd like to give my guest the last word of the interview. So is there something I didn't ask you? Something you'd like to tell us, a new project coming up? The floor is yours.
Well, the album Worldview is releasing on Friday the 29th. I wanted to note real quickly, a couple of important, I think very important to note about the album. My last album, Petal, was kind of about, it was about things like, I'll just put a couple words out there, universal consciousness, or just impermanence, a couple of, you know, big ideas. And then I realized that I wanted this next album to be something that I wanted to make some statements about the way I felt about the world in its position. So I feel like this album's a little more political for me in terms of the statements that I'm making through the music. So a couple of tunes in the album, I mentioned the idea of being influenced by the refugee crisis and the way things are happening. And one tune is called Little Curdy, for Alan Curdy. And that particular tune was written because you may all remember the story about the Alan Curdy, the little Syrian refugee boy who was washed up on the shore on Italy. And there's a picture of him face down in the on the beach. When I saw that, that broke my heart entirely. I mean, I have had my child was, my baby was a year old. And I just, that impacted me very strongly and impacted my writing. And that's where I wrote that composition. I just wanted people to sort of feel that. And I hope that particular tune brings some of those emotions out, a feeling of how I felt when I saw that and how wrong that is for that to happen. And then in the same way, Innocence 12/14/12 was December 14, 2012, with the Sandy Hook shootings, the murders of the little children and the teachers at Sandy Hook in Connecticut at the school. That was another incident. I was like, why does this have to happen? Why does this have to happen? And I keep asking that question. So this comes back to what the important part about the children that I'm talking about. So I want this album, you know, there's a lot of lightheartedness about this album as well, but this album is a serious album in the sense that I want the messages to come forth, you know, in this album, that the things I'm thinking about with regard to how important it is to keep this world safe for children, keep give them their safe spaces. So that's, I think, the most important thing about this album that I want people to, the message that I want people to get. And one last thing, if it's okay, can I just mention my website?
Yes.
So my website is www.sundarmusic.com. And I should also note that if you're looking for Avatar Online, this is kind of a funny story. So if you look for Avatar Online, first of all, most people spell Avatar A-V-A-T-A-R. The way I spell my band is A-V-A-T-A-A-R. So two A's at the end. And then if you look that up, it'll still put you to A-V-A-T-A-R. Even a band, because there's a band with that name, which is a Swedish death metal band. That is not my band. Just want to be clear right now. So you'll have to search for Avatar Band, A-V-A-T-A-A-R Band, and then even put in Worldview, because I should have researched this before I made the band name, because that has been like, I could swear people have looked for the band, they haven't found it. You know, it's been a real challenge, but I wanted people to know that. So Avatar Band and put Worldview and it should come up. So That's what I wanted to say.
For more information on Sundar Viswanathan, sundarmusic.com. And Sundar would like to thank the Canada Council for the Arts and the Ontario Arts Council, who supported the creation of Worldview. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 10 a.m. for another show. I also host the Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance at gmail.com or info@wgxc.org. We appreciate your feedback. feedback@wgxc.org or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Thank you.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.